Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott.
Oh, hello.
Sean Preece. And Tim Schwartz.
Ho, ho, ho!
Hey! Yes, it's a Merry Christmas from Tech Talk. Merry Christmas to you, Tim Schwartz.
Merry Christmas to you, Stephen Scott.
I have to say, I'm a bit disappointed, if I'm honest with you, because, you know, our man in Manchester, the man among men, that's us, by the way, is not here. Sean Preece is not here for the final show of the year. Is that not disgusting?
Is that not just Sean Preece? Just par for the course, you know.
Well, you know, he's not here. He has got good reason, so he tells us. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so he claims. He alleges there's a good reason.
Yeah, whatever. Probably a lamb chop involved somewhere. But yes, we're here. Yeah, we turned up. You know, Christmas, busy with all the wrapping and all the rest. No, we still managed it. How are you getting on with wrapping, by the way? Are you using technology for that or other people, Tim?
You know, I really wish I had used technology, the little checkbox on Amazon to let them do it. But unfortunately, I didn't. So, yeah, I'm going to have to find somebody because wrapping doesn't look pretty when I do it.
Do you know, that's a really good point, because I was just thinking, as those words fell out of my mouth, as often they do, thank you for agreeing, I was thinking, hang on a minute, you know, how would technology help? But you're right, you could actually get the big company that begins with A, also known as Amazon, they can do it. And other companies and charities at this time of year, I don't know if this happens in America, but in the UK, there are charities that turn up at like shopping centres, and they will actually wrap your presents for you while you wait, which I think is a brilliant service. It raises money for charity, and on top of that, you get your presents wrapped nicely and neatly. That's the future.
That is definitely the future. It's the way to go.
So, anyway, we've got a tech show today, and we're kind of just... It feels a bit like end of school, if I'm honest, for end of term. So we're going to just kick back and talk about the best of 2018, what we remember from the year that was 2018. That's coming up on Tech Talk today. And it is a shame Sean's not here because, you know, he would love to be part of this to talk about the year that's gone. Because honestly, there's been so much news. It's been, in the past couple of years, I've really noticed, and I'm sure you have as well, I just have really noticed an increase. And not just the number of technology stories that make it into the daily news, because there's lots of those. And often they are, you know, scary stories about privacy and security and all that. But there is also a huge number of actually really positive accessibility stories. And that seems to be coming through more and more, especially this year, I think.
Absolutely. This year, it's so nice to have accessibility and mainstream in the same sentence so often in one year. I don't know how many times we've had that conversation, the three of us, about mainstream accessibility with mainstream companies. Yes, you're right. There's so many situations where it's, you know, what company stole my data this week? Whose photos got shared to where this week? You know, all those scary stories that happen. But yeah, there's so many new technologies that are coming out and, you know, just different products and so many things that are just accessible to us or being made accessible. It's just so nice.
Well, we're going to talk about some of that this hour because, you know, it is the end of the year and it's time to kick back a bit. I'm not saying I've started on the Christmas wine yet. and when I say wine, I don't mean that. No, not that wine. No. Although I'll have a glass. No, actually what I'm talking about is I think we want to talk about what's been good in the year. Actually, there's been quite a lot. And it's kind of made me think that when we get into next year, Tim, I think we should do the opposite, essentially, of what the weekly whine is. We should talk about the weekly good stuff. Because there are a lot of good things, and I want to point out one right away. JAWS 2019 landed.
Last month.
And there is one feature in there which I absolutely adore. And I found out.
I know what this is.
You do know what it is. And I'm going to tell you because, you know, this is a brilliant feature. So if anyone's looking for JAWS 2019 and a reason to upgrade, okay, it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but, and if you're like Tim who lives in America, you get great deals on it. You get great deals. Sound like Trump.
Yes, you do.
But you do because you get, you know, you get it for, what is it, $90 a year? Is that right? $90?
Yeah, subscribe for $90 US per year, which really isn't bad.
That needs to come here. That just needs to come
it
here.
It does. You know, it's a shame that it's not. Yeah.
But there is one feature in there that I want to mention because you, Sean, and I, we three went along to, virtually anyway, I went along to an event held by Sight and Sound Technology. And we joined at a webinar session kind of explaining what the benefits were of JAWS 2019. And one feature stood out. Even then. But you know that way you hear about a feature and think, yeah, but in real life, will I use it? This is one I use. And it is to do with spelling. Now, I mentioned this before. One of the issues I've had is keeping up with spelling and keeping up with, you know, trying to make sure the words are spelled correctly and all that. And, you know, using spell check has been a bit of a learning process. I am using it more than I've ever used it. But with JAWS 2019, which I don't use in the office because we don't have it in the office yet. I'm using 2018, although I'm told we'll get 2019 next year. So that's good. But this feature, this is standout. What it does is as you're typing a word, and it sounds so basic, but you get this little when you get the word wrong. That sounds quite close to it, isn't it?
Which can be fantastic or annoying or both. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it can be. But also it can be brilliant because it just tells you. So you type a word and you get as you're typing the next word. So even though you, in your head, you know that last word is wrong. So you go back and you change it, like regarding, I typed the other day, is regrading. And instantly it knew that was wrong. So, you know, it just goes and you're like, right, okay. And because it'll do it in Microsoft Word, I think it'll even contextualize it a bit so it knows, no, that's wrong. That's not the right word. And obviously, if you've got autocorrect switch on, sometimes it will fix itself after you come out of the word. So you can type the word, hit space, it'll tell you it's wrong, but then it will autocorrect it. So you go back and say, what's the problem? But as long as you know that, it's okay. So I think that's a great feature of 2019 from JAWS. And I know we've talked a lot about Narrator and how it's got great benefits, and NVDA does too. But I think if you've got JAWS and you're looking to upgrade to the 2019 series, that is one really good feature. Especially if, like me, you have issues with spelling, you can go back. I don't have issues with spelling. I have issues with remembering how the word was spelt before. And I, in my head, I am trying to recreate what I used to see. And that's how I do it. So this
sometimes
helps.
Your fingers don't want to do what your head is telling them to do.
Every time, yeah. That happens to me all the time. And that probably that happens to everybody. That's not a sighted thing or a sightless thing. That's everything. That's everyone. But I really like that feature. So that is one for me. You're using 2019 as well. And you're liking it?
I am using 2019 and I'm liking it a lot. It's very fast, very smooth. And yeah, I mean, I've been using NVDA for the last year and a half without stoppage. Before that, I used JAWS 17, I think, for quite a while. Mm. I'd been using JAWS for 10 years before that. And as much as I loved NVDA, it was a great experience and I really enjoyed it. Something about using Eloquence again with JAWS and just getting in all these new features and the OCR features that have been out now for a couple of years and the spell check features and all of that. It's so smooth. It's a really nice experience.
It is. And I must say 2018 is not bad either. No. It's interesting. You've jumped from 17 to 19. JAWS 2018 is actually pretty smooth as well. I use it on a fairly, I would say, low power PC. It's not the most powerful machine in the world. It's got an Intel Core i3 processor in it. So it's not top of the line by any stretch, a couple of years old now, and it's actually it runs pretty smoothly, although it usually is things like Microsoft Office that decides to have a bit of a wobble, and that's usually when things go wrong. It's not JAWS specific, but when JAWS is allowed to free roam and do what it's doing properly, it's actually pretty good. So
I never thought I would say this, is when Microsoft Office goes a little wobbly, now I find myself using Narrator for those moments, which I never thought I would say before.
I know. Well, I was using a Windows XP machine the other day. I know they still exist.
Oh, wow.
It was actually one of our oldest Office PCs we've got in here. And it's used for, I have no idea what, you know, counting money, you know, or, you know, just to show people what the past looked like. But, you know, I was going into it and I thought the past would be brilliant on this. I thought, let's have a look at narrator. Let's just see where we were. Oh, my. Oh, my. It was awful. Terrible experience with it. Very slow, very sluggish, almost non-responsive in most things. Compare that to today's narrator and, yeah, it's moved on a lot.
Yeah, so, tell me narrator's not gotten better over the years, yeah.
We're going to talk about Microsoft a bit later because, I think this is a good topic to discuss about looking back at the year and what's been standing out for us, for sure. I also want to say, just at this point, Chris is not with us. Sighted Guy Chris, unfortunately, has not been able to be with us this week. So, honestly, they're dropping like flies. So it's
they
just
are.
You and
it's
I.
just ridiculous. First Sean, then Chris.
I know.
I don't know what's going to happen. What, some sort of Christmas bug going around?
Well, do you know what? We're kind of thinking of this because obviously this is the last show of the year and it feels a bit like nobody loves us anymore. just Tim and I sitting here in a room going, right, okay. So what we thought we'd do is if we can get everyone together, and I hope we can, we're going to do a bit of a Christmas special. Now, we don't normally do this. And it's not going to be on air because the radio station has got itself all sorted out. And we only came up with this idea a couple of days ago. So, you know, we're not the most organized in the world. Who knew? Anyway, I thought this was a good idea. So on the podcast, we're going to do a little podcast, just a short thing, nothing particularly long. But on Christmas Day, you can download an extra slice of Tech Talk that we'll put up there on the podcast. You can check it out. Not sure when, but we'll probably put it up at like 9 in the morning or something. You know, a Christmas present, an early Christmas present for you. So, you know, before you open your presents, you can listen to some Tech Talk. That'll be a little special episode for you. I nearly said a wee little episode, which I'm turning very Scottish on you.
Just a wee episode.
A tiny little one. So we'll put that up on Christmas Day. Check it out from about 9 a.m. and it'll be there. And hopefully, fingers crossed, if he's able to, Sean will be back and so will Sighted Guy Chris. And a couple of you have sent emails, Christmas related emails, which I thank you for. Billy Burrell being one who sent in a poem this year. Can't wait to hear it, Billy. We'll get that onto the podcast for next week. So do check it out next week, Christmas Day, in fact. So there you go. But anyway, yes, let's get into 2018. Let's break it down because I've got one thing that I want to bring up that I think is the biggest announcement of the year. And I know you do as well, too. You've got your announcement for the year. Mine's the Orbit Reader.
Woohoo! Oh, the Orbit Reader is such a great, you know, little piece of technology there. It was such a long time coming, Stephen. And it's actually, I think, surpassed maybe all expectations. Is that fair to say?
I think it has. I think it's got good points and bad points to it. I've had a chance to spend some time with the Orbit Reader, and I'm lucky to be in a position where I'm able to sort of hang on to it for a little while, which is handy because I'm learning Braille at the moment. I don't really think, if I'm honest, that this is the kind of device to learn on. You do need a Perkins Brailler. You need to learn to type and read back and make the mistakes and do all that. So, you know, for that reason, I'm using my Perkins Brailler with my fingerprint course, and I'll continue doing that over Christmas and New Year because I'm really enjoying it and getting into it. But I think for this kind of device, I think in a couple of months' time, I'll be like, right, let's do this. Let's use this to make notes and start using it. And I'm hoping, I cannot wait for the day to come when I can read my notes here on the show. That is going to be an amazing event. But just a quick point on the Orbit. Right, so overall, this is an amazing announcement. It's bringing affordable Braille, finally, or affordable Braille display to blind and partially sighted people. Now, I will say it's still not the cheapest device on the market. But, I mean, if you're an RNIB Connect member, you're getting it for £400. It's, you know, 50 quid more if you're not a member. But you know what? You're going to become a member, aren't you? You know, it's just going
of
to become a
will.
Member. And, you know, you don't have to be blind to be a member. And that's really important to know. So if you want to join RNIB Connect, maybe you're thinking this would be an excellent Christmas present or maybe an excellent thing to buy for my loved one in the new year or for someone you know or for your child, then, you know, actually, the best thing you can do is become an RNIB Connect member because you benefit from that discount. But aside all that, the technology itself is pretty good. I mean, you tend to think, as we all do, that if something's cheaper, it's not as good. And you've had for years Focus, Humanware, HIMS, you know, all these companies producing Braille displays, very high quality displays, very expensive displays as well. And they have their good points, they have their bad points. I think ultimately people who use things like the Humanware and the HIMS tend to use them, I would say, much harder than people who might buy the Orbit, I think.
Because I think that's fair.
They're using them at work. So, you know, they're quite kind of on them, you know. So for that reason, you know, they will have problems, they will have flaws, they will break down or whatever after a year or 2 years or whatever, and people have to get them fixed and all the rest. But I think with this, my experience has been that the size is lovely. It's a very neat... I think of it like a little lunchbox or a little safe deposit box. You know those kind you put your coins in?
Yeah.
Little lockable ones. It's kind of like that. It's maybe a little bit bigger than your kind of coin box. But it's such a lovely size. And the one thing I haven't bought for it yet is a carry case, but I will be, because actually it just needs something to make it more portable. Because you wouldn't want to chuck it in a bag with the keys kind of bare, if you like. But it's got, you know, lesser keys than a lot of the main displays have. It's got your six main keys. I don't have it in front of me right now, so I can't feel it to remind myself of all the keys. But it does have a kind of circular keypad, if you like, where you can go up, down, left, right, and there's a select button in the middle. You've got a space bar. You know, and it's just got your little row of, you know, of keys, of 20 cells that you can read from. And it's all very lovely. My first problem with it was I had read a lot of documentation suggesting it wasn't a note taker, that all you can do with it is really read things that you've put on an SD card, or that you can you know, connect to a phone or a computer or whatever and use it that way. But I've learned since that you can, with not much effort really, use it as a note taker. It's just that you need the SD card in there to do it. So actually, I just don't think the information has been as clear as it could be on that. So maybe that's something they can work on. In terms of the Braille output, I think the Braille output is very good, almost better than a Perkins. Better than any other. I've been trying different Braille displays for my own purposes because I'm getting one. And it's I've tried Humanware, and I'm trying HIMS, and I'm trying one at the minute from Focus. And all the Braille, I mean, all very good. But I've found that the pins are much sharper and much clearer on the Orbit. And I think that is where I'm probably headed. However, interestingly enough, someone from another company, I won't say which one, but someone from a different company said, actually, the reason that our devices, because I would call I don't want to say the name of the company, but the other one that I tried, which was one of the three that I've just mentioned. Their keyboard, not the keyboard, but the pins, the display, the pins are quite spongy. Maybe that's not the right word for it, but what I mean is that when you put your finger on them...
Springy
is maybe better. Yeah, that's a better word for it. You maybe put your finger on it. If you pushed in too hard, the pins would push back in. That doesn't happen with the Orbit. And I said at the time, I thought that was a bit of a negative towards that other device. I thought the Orbit was better. But the point was made to me that if you're reading for a long period of time, eventually it could get quite sore just having that inability to move, those pins being unable to move. Whereas with that sort of springiness to them, it's easier on your fingers. So that's a time will tell thing. But I think that's an interesting thing for people to know. That if you're reading for a long period of time, it depends on you. It depends on the sensitivity of your fingers, I guess. You know, maybe you find that having the sharper pins, it's not sharper pins, but they just don't move. You know, you put your fingers quite hard on them, they don't move. Whereas on the other devices, they do spring a bit more. So again, that can be a plus or it can be a negative depending on how you use the device.
Well, I think like any of these devices, it comes down to your personal comfortability. Like you said, it depends on you and what is going to be your best use case. Somebody might like the more springy feel or you know, that type of feel. Somebody might want that feel of the Orbit where it's just that sturdier feel to the pins. So it does come down to that preference. That being said, price always still gets me. I know that gets you too. And when you're talking potentially, you know, thousands of pounds for some devices as opposed to 400 pounds for the Orbit. Wow. I may do without the springiness of the pins for the difference in cost.
Exactly. And that's, I think, the point. You know, actually, it is down to preference, but, you know, at the same token, £2,000 versus 400 pounds, you know, it kind of says it all, doesn't it? So, you know, I think it's a really good system. I really do think the Orbit's a really good device. And what I think the key message I would say to anyone is that, you know, if you've tried any other devices out there, give this a try, because I guarantee you, you'll probably find it's equal to the others on the market. And with those kind of solid metallic pins, as you know, in the cells, I think you'll find that to be a really useful thing, especially if you're reading notes. You want that clarity. There is one downside to it, and this is something which a few people have picked up on, and that's when you change line, when you move line, either up or down, there is a rather unsatisfying noise, which I can only describe as getting money out of a cash machine, because it kind of goes as it changes, and then you change the line. Now, that is unfortunate, because for me, sitting here, I couldn't really use it quietly. So that's something to think about. But other than that, it's a great piece of kit, and try it out. RNIB are selling it right now, so you can get it. Try it out, see what you think, and we'll be interested to hear your thoughts next year if you do decide to go down the route. If you've bought one already, we'd love to hear about it. So that's my sort of top thing. That's my top piece of news in Blind World for 2018. Tim.
I think that's a fantastic pick, because you're right. Having an affordable Braille display in that size at that price, that's big, big news for the blind and visually impaired community. We've been waiting so long for something like that to happen, bringing these costs down, and hopefully more companies will do that, and we'll have a competitive market at that price point for these Braille displays. And hopefully that will, if there ever were truth to the story that Braille was dying or dead, maybe if that is true, maybe this will help there to be a resurgence in Braille. So that can only be a good thing, I think. But when I was thinking about this, Stephen, we were talking about what would be the big stories of the year. And I agree with you on Braille. There's so many other things that we'll talk about that I also agree with. But I was trying to think from the standpoint of companies. What have we seen from maybe an individual company that's not been there necessarily before? And honestly, I have to nod to Microsoft. Now, the last year and a half or so, a lot though this year, but within the last year and a half, Microsoft has really stepped up their game. I mean, we've been talking for 10 years about Apple's accessibility and VoiceOver in the last many years with TalkBack on Android. And, you know, we've talked about all these other things that have become accessible in the mainstream. But Microsoft has really gone above and beyond that. Earlier this year, they had said they were committing a certain amount of money to accessibility across the board. And they've really focused on that well, I think. They have their Seeing AI app, so you can scan documents, products, faces, you know, all kinds of different things. You know, you can scan with Seeing AI. They have their Soundscape app, which allows you to get information about your surroundings. Now, this coming year, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this as time goes by, but in the coming year, in 2019, they're going to start accessibility webinars that they're going to have once a month to explain how each of their products work with accessibility and things like that. So they really have stepped it up when it comes to accessibility across the board, but especially when it comes to blind and visually impaired products. And I haven't even mentioned Narrator. We talked about that earlier in the show. Narrator has gotten such a large update here recently that it's making it, dare I say, more viable as a screen reader. So just this whole focus on Microsoft to really finally get in the game with Apple and others and step it up, I've really been impressed with what they've done. So I would say for mainstream accessibility, this has been the year of Microsoft.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think you're right. I mean, other companies continue to do well, but I think Google put a lot of work into accessibility, and I think they continue to. Yep. I think a lot of that flies under the radar a bit, because I don't think their Chromebook offering is as yet fully formed. I don't think the product is underperforming.
Mm-mm, it's not bad, but
no,
not there.
I think it's just not. I don't think the product line overall has. I was thinking about this the other day, because I was thinking about Google, actually, and I thought, what am I missing here? There's something that I'm missing about Google, because it's got all these great new products. It's brought out the Pixel Slate this year. You're now seeing the Pixel Book, obviously getting an update, and Pixel 3 and all that. It seems to me that their product line is very much aimed at education, and that they're doing this to get, you know, products into schools, which is a good idea. And I was thinking, so hang on, so what we're doing here, say we as in Google, they're kind of building a product for the future, so that as these children grow up, you know, the products will develop with them. And that's kind of, sort of, maybe not entirely, but sort of what Apple did, in the sense of they kind of got into our psyches early and then carried through to later life. Some would argue they didn't really follow that path, and of course business doesn't work on that kind of basis. You know, it goes where the profit is. But I think it's interesting to see how Google has developed. I think Apple continue to strive to be, you know, good at what they do. I think there's a little bit of complacency from time to time with Apple, if I'm honest. Just because I see some releases coming. I think iOS 12 has been the best release so far, I must say. But, you know, iOS 11 was not. Endless accessibility flaws, and major flaws otherwise. But I think they finally got it right. I think their hardware is where it needs to be. I don't know where they'll take it next, because really, how far can you go with all this? But I think we are seeing that evolution rather than revolution that they keep talking about, which I think is good. I mean, I wasn't overly keen on it because, you know, I like to see new toys every so often. But, you know, at the same token, you know, we've got to be realistic. How far can they push it? So, yeah, I think you're right. I think Microsoft have done a tremendous job, maybe more than the others, actually. And I think you're right to say that, because I think you're right to say that, you know, they've done really well and highlight them, because they've brought a lot to the market. I think there are still glaring issues with Microsoft as well, though. And I think some of it is because they focus on key areas and they get those areas really, really right. But then you get Skype.
Well, no, exactly. Like, yeah, I agree with that, because as many good things as they've been doing, you're right. The failings of Skype this year, that was very upsetting, and they are working on that, but it should have never really happened. Their app store still leaves some to be desired, because a lot of the apps are just not, even using Narrator, which you would think would be made for those apps, it still isn't the best experience. So yeah, I don't want to paint this picture that Microsoft is the best end all be all in accessibility in the mainstream. However, I think that they've just made the biggest strides in this last year or so above all the other companies. I mean, again, Apple's been there for a while. And yeah, we could argue that some of the TV makers, Samsung and LG and others, they're finally coming around on this as well. You know, Amazon, of course, is, you know, accessibility by accident. So, you know, it's not that there aren't other mainstream players here that are doing good things in accessibility. There definitely are. And you said that before. And Microsoft's not maybe, you know, the best of those companies, but I think this last year they've really been dedicated to the most of these companies. And so that was, you know, my thinking and just wanting to focus on them here.
No, I think you're right. I think it's I love the comment, Amazon's accessibility by accident. That sounds like a tagline that no one wants.
No.
But actually, you're right. I mean, you know, we haven't really touched on Amazon, and it's interesting because Amazon, and the irony is just unbelievable, because one of the biggest presents I think most blind people will get by choice this year is an Amazon Echo or an Amazon Echo Dot.
Yeah.
And I think that product will be and will actually grow into one of the most useful devices for blind people in the future. I mean, it's got great features at the moment, but I think it's going to grow even more. Now, interestingly, I don't mention as much, and I'm conscious of this, I don't mention the Google Home as much. Now, I've got a Google Home Mini.
And I believe Sean does as well. I do not, but I know you both do.
Yeah, we've got them. We barely use them. Yep. Now, I think, how was it I described this earlier to someone? I was talking to someone about this morning, and I said, you know, for me, it's like with the Amazon Echo, I understand where I am. I know that there are things this thing can do. I get regular emails and updates saying, hey, try this or try that, or look, here's a new skill. And because of those skills, I'm able to kind of get a handle on what the thing can do. Or, you know, oh, I fancy playing a game. Well, here's 75 games of choice. All right, okay, I'll enable this one, that one, whatever. The way I describe the Google Home is it's like being dropped into a major city, dropped into the centre of it and saying, enjoy. Okay, but what's round here? I'll just, you know, you'll find stuff. And it's like, I don't like that approach. I think if Google Home had gone a similar way with maybe apps or skills or its own version or own name of that kind of idea, I think that might have worked better. But I think because I don't really know what it can do, and I'm sure it can do lots of things, that's kind of the irritant for me. I believe it's probably, in a lot of ways, it's probably better than Amazon's device, especially around search. I mean, that's really what it's there for. It's brilliant for that kind of thing. And I have asked it questions and it's given me detailed answers where, you know, Amazon Echo will say, don't know, or, you know, I'm working on it. I'll get back to you in a year. And that's where I kind of think, that'd be a great device, but it's just not there. So that's why I kind of default. And also, truth be told, it arrived first in the UK. The Amazon Echo was here first. Google Home came second. And I think a lot of people like me and like the geeks and the kind of first responders to any call of new technology jumped up and said, we'll have that, thanks. And then when we all bought, you know, 18 of them each, we thought, well, I'm not buying all that again. So you just don't bother so much with it. But it does, and I think this is important for people to know, they are very interchangeable, more so, and it's, again, ironic, but you can do the similar things with each one. So you may have, for example, smart bulbs in your house. You can use the same smart bulbs with the Google Home as you can with the Amazon Echo. We're seeing that these two assistants are kind of arriving in the same place at the same time nowadays. We're seeing a lot of smart speakers taking this on, like Sonos Beam has got support for Google Assistant and Amazon Echo. And I'm not saying Lady A's name, but we know who we mean. Bose headphones, bringing in both options. You can choose which one you want. And I think that's a really smart move. That's not something you would see with Siri. Siri would never join that particular party. So, yeah, I think it's interesting to see how this is all developing. And it kind of leads on to what I think has been another big thing of the year. I mean, I think there's two sides of this for me. And maybe this is a way to break it down, but I think in the blind world, the Orbit Reader was very much the winner. Big story of the year. But I think in sort of general terms, in the wider world of technology, I think this was the year of the smart gadget or the smart home. Now, I think there are people out there who will jump up and down immediately and say, no, you're a year early. Because next year's the year of the smart home. And that's probably true as well.
But to the big time tech geeks, you're maybe a year late because they were all on this last year.
Yeah, that's probably true as well. But the reason I'm saying it this year, because I wanted this last year. I wanted to say this is the year of the smart home. I kind of felt we were promised it last year and it never really took off.
Yeah, it was so close.
In fact, I think we said on this program last year, I must dig it out and find out, but I'm sure we said that that was not the year of the smart home. In fact, maybe this year will be. And yep. I think it was. And I think it's because, I don't know about your superstores over there in America, but here in the good old Britain, you know, while we're still in Europe, we'll be decent. And who knows what next year will turn into. Fighting
That's
for
a whole
bread,
other podcast.
I'd imagine, yeah. I think this has been a turning point. When you go into the superstores, like the big superstore, John Lewis, PC World, whatever you go to here in the UK, and there's not many of them left, let's be honest, but you go to those, last year, 2017, you would go in and you would find a whole wide range of smart gadgets, smart products, and you'd find things like window locks and, you know, fancy weather stations and all this kind of stuff. And all of that could connect through the Amazon Echo and through the Google Home. And there was so much stuff. There were literally, I think I counted on one stand, I think it was Samsung's smart things. I counted about maybe 12 or 13 things. And to be honest, they probably just weren't selling because people didn't know what they were for. Or how does that work with that? And how does that... And it was beyond people. It was beyond me, and I'm a geek. And I think people just looked at that and thought, whereas this year, I've seen a much more concentrated display of smart bulbs and smart plugs. And I think that has kind of caught the imagination. Whether it's taken off or not, time will tell. But I think people have got a better understanding of that kind of technology. And the reason I say that, and can almost be certain of what I'm saying, is because I've seen the company IKEA bring out the smart bulbs this year. I think they had them out the year before as well, but this year they do have them even more. They're bringing out full colour ones now, and they're also bringing out smart plugs. And that's the two categories of smart. That's it. And I'm seeing the other companies doing the same. And I think what they've done is the industry has maybe said to itself, we're never going to sell all these products. Not right now. But we need to get people in the door to understand how this works. So buy a bulb, or we'll bundle one in free when you buy a whatever, and let people try it. Because if you buy one and you like it, you'll buy more. And it's true, you know? And that's how it starts. Give people a chance to find their way in with this. We've seen huge price drops over Black Friday. Of course, they've all gone back up now, but they'll come back down after the holidays, you know, of smart plugs and all the rest. And I think for that reason, these devices, that concentration of devices, has helped make the smart home more of a reality for other people.
I think that's a good point, because once something like that gets into our culture and gets into the psyche of people where they begin to understand what it is, and then add to that the affordability of it. Last year, one of the reasons why we were saying it wasn't quite the year of the smart home is because not only was it not necessarily in, you know, the culture yet, people weren't talking about it or understanding it, but it was just still a little bit too expensive. And now with companies like IKEA and that other, you know, big company with the letter A on the internet that we talk about, Amazon, yeah. They actually released their own smart plug this year.
That's right.
Yeah. And that, you know, that was the first time they had done that. They hadn't actually, of all the Amazon basics, you know, components that they sell, this was the first year that they actually put out a smart plug. When they put out the Sean would kill me for perpetuating this, but when they put out the Echo Big, as you call it, I believe they were putting in a Philips smart bulb with that, and had it be easily set up with a smart home, you know, in and of itself. So with companies like Amazon and Google making their assistants so easily accessible to smart home technology, even Apple to a degree with their HomeKit, with Siri and the HomeKit, you can, you know, can do things with your smartphones as well, and Android also. So being able to access smart home devices is so much easier than it's ever been. People understanding the purpose of it, and they can afford it now. When you're talking, yes, on sale, maybe 10 or 15 pounds or 20 pounds for a plug, but even not on sale, 25, 30 pounds for a smart plug, that's really, really good. And some of them you need hubs, some of them you don't. And if I had said that sentence 2 years ago, nobody would have had a clue what I was talking about.
No.
I think now people have a much better understanding. I remember a couple of years ago when Tim Cook stood on stage showing us how we could monitor putting our garage doors up and down with a camera on our smartphone or our Apple Watch, and we could command Siri to open our doors or unlock our doors and unlock the garage and all these kind of things. And people are going, what? but now here we are, and that's becoming a mainstream thing. So yeah, I think that this definitely is now the year of smart home. Is it going to be bigger in years to come? Sure, obviously. But I think this is really the first big year of all of these things finally coming together.
And you'll start to see developments, new properties will start to have a lot of this technology built in. I mean, you can buy, I don't recommend any of this stuff because I don't know what to do with it, but you can buy plug fixes, what do you call them? Plug sockets for the wall. Not smart plugs, but they're actually smart. They just replace your existing plug socket, so that you can have it all built in. And again, all that can be controlled through Lady A or Google Home. And
those are nice for dimmer switches. If you live in a house where you've got the slider dimmer switch, those take a special wall mount just like that. So those are separate. But again, it's just one more thing to add to it.
And the fact is, you can go crazy with this. I mean, I did. I spent well over £200 last week on bulbs. And I've gone through, I've done what I call the wife test. Because if my wife doesn't get it, it's not happening in my house. And I get that, because I don't want to put something in which is going to create hassle for me primarily, but also for her, because I don't want her to be in a situation where she can't turn a light on. It is rather amusing when she asks, continuously asks it to turn off the hall light, and it doesn't quite grab what she said. I don't know why, because she speaks perfectly good English, but for some reason, sometimes, as you know with Lady A, doesn't always catch everything, and mm-hmm. you'll get this kind of, well, I don't know what you're talking about, and it's, come on, and, you know, just want to scream and throw everything out the window. And it's just, it has that technology, that's the next step, is getting all that right, because if it can't understand you, that's not a good place to start. But I think you're right around the technology and the growth of this. I think we're going to start to see more integration coming. One thing I'd love to see is more integration between the Ring doorbell and the Amazon Echo itself. I don't really understand, because these two companies now, well, Amazon owns Ring.
Yes, they do.
It's bought it. So I don't understand why they can't either issue a software update or give some kind of capability to use the Echo as a doorbell, because that would make more sense than having to buy additional bits for the Ring to do its job, which isn't quite as good. And, you know, Nest, on the other side of the coin, which is Google-owned, you know, you can, it's got wonderful features. I wish I had gone down that route, because the Nest has got, like, it's called the Hello, I think is the doorbell.
Yes.
And you, so someone you know, have to set all this up, obviously, but if you have your wife coming into the house, it will say, you know, Marie is at the door, or Jennifer's at the door, or if it's Mum at the door, it'll say Mum is at the, you know, so it knows who you are. It's using facial recognition to do that. I'd love to see those features develop in the Ring, and I think if it doesn't, then that product will have problems, because I think the Nest is moving on lovely. A lot of people, I think Ring is probably more advertised here in the UK. I certainly see more ads for it, and people kind of associate it as being the doorbell, the smart doorbell of choice.
Same here, I think.
I think it is down to advertising, but I don't know if it is a better product, if I'm truthful about it. But then I haven't tried Nest yet with the Hello. Maybe one day.
I think that it's an inexpensive, relatively, you know, comparative, you know, product. It's an easy product to install. It's easy to understand, and it does the basics of what you need it to do. But yeah, for some of those other features that you might want, you have to go to a Nest or something else. And it is a shame. And I'm hoping that Amazon in the coming year will upgrade that, because it would be nice to be able to have those kind of same features and have it tie to Lady A and just say, yep, you know, this is the person at the door. I mean, it will ring and tell you, you know, that there's someone at the door. And if you have an Echo Show or, you know, something on a television, then yes, it will show the video of it, but just not the same as that facial recognition and those just that little tweak of, you know, advanced settings.
And it's not quite as quick as I would like either. I mean, I've seen a situation where I've had a Ring notification. You know, I've been out and I've got the notification and I've pretty much hit on that notification instantly. And it's still, by the time it kind of loads it all up and, you know, the postman's gone.
Yeah.
And it's
whoever was the door is long gone.
There's a guy sort of wandering up the drive. You're like, excuse me, you know, screaming out, hoping that you'll hear me. So, you know, that technology could improve a little bit. But I think the smart home, certainly my home, is a lot smarter than well, me primarily, but also it is more smarter than it was last year. And I think that's because this technology, I mean, the smart bulbs, the smart plugs have made a big difference. You know, being able to turn on the Christmas tree with the smart bulb, a smart plug is great. Having smart bulbs in the house with motion sensing so that, you know, when we walk into the hall, the lights just beautifully come on. They don't just turn on, they sort of light up. You know, in the morning, you can set your smart bulbs to wake up your lights. And it's just, oh, that's lovely. That's lovely stuff. And I want to see more of that next year, I think.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the tree, you know, that accessibility was a big selling point for me for smart home. The motion detection was a big selling point for me. But honestly, I didn't put together smart home in my mind until I was talking to Sean one day. He was in his home. And as we all know, he's got the studio shed out back.
Yep.
And he spoke to Lady A in the house and said, so I forget what the keyword was, but something like, I'm on my way to the studio, or I'm going to record, or something that he had set up as a routine. And by the time he got to the shed, his computer booted up, the lights turned on, his fan turned on, I think a couple other things happened, and was all ready to go by the time he got out to the shed. That, when I heard him do that, that showed me the ability and the future of what smart homes could be.
And I think what that also says to you is that when it comes to electricity costs, you know, you can seriously get into that. I mean, I don't turn off my computer. I hope my wife isn't listening to this, but because I tell her I do. But I don't, you know, I just leave it on because I want to be able to get to it quickly. So I just leave it on. And I don't know how much electricity it uses while it's sitting there, but, you know, it would obviously use less if it wasn't turned on. So it's about thinking about those things, and you can, you know, think about cutting down your bills and all of that. So, and actually that's something for next year, because we've heard in the last couple of weeks, you know, regular listeners will have been listening to the conversations I've been having with people at TechShare. And we have from John Morsfold, finally, on the subject of smart meters. And, you know, I may be talking out of school here, but, you know, I was in a meeting this week with John and some other members of the RNIB team to talk about, you know, how we're going to work this through in the next, you know, sort of message out to people in the next few months about smart meters. And I think it's great that we're finally having that conversation because, you know, I don't feel we've had that enough of that chat. But also it's important to know how the technology works. And how it can help, because, you know, all we're looking for here is access to information, and that information, you know, will help us save money, and that could be a good thing, you know, for a lot of people. So there's that. So yeah, I think the home is definitely getting smarter, and I think that'll go even further in 2019. Now, speaking of 2019, the year is almost upon us, the new year, and I think we should look at some of the headlines, future headlines, right, that we have got coming up, things we think we'll be talking about in 2019. I think more smart stuff, for sure. I think we'll also be talking more about accessing audiobooks, because one story that I saw, which we're going to get into properly in the new year, and that was around the OverDrive service from RNIB. It gets a lot of plaudits and a lot of criticism as well. It's not the easiest app in the world to use. And for that reason, RNIB are listening. And there are some announcements to come out on that next year. I'm not going to say what they are because it's not for me to say. But there are more things coming on that topic next year. So stick around for that. But one thing I can tell you about, which I think is really interesting, and I think we'll be talking about a lot more, and I think you should all try this over the holidays, is the Dolphin Easy Reader app. Now, if you've heard of this app before, you might have heard about it on the show or on others, but I think this is a brilliant app, and I've downloaded it, and I've signed up through, so I've used my RNIB OverDrive library card number and PIN, and I've logged in. I've also logged in through RNIB Newsagent as well, which gives me the daily newspapers, and I've got to tell you, Tim, you know, this is incredible. I mean, you know, my big issue has been I get an email every morning, several emails every morning from RNIB, an automatic email which has in it a text file and a zip file containing an HTML document, which are the daily papers. So again, each email has its own newspaper. So whether it be I sign up to The Guardian, the Daily Mail, the New York Times, whatever it is. And when I get that, I just open it up and try and read it on my phone, but it's quite awkward because the phone doesn't read zip files very well, but it will preview them, and that does let me get to the text, but I have to listen to the entire newspaper in one run. And that's not much fun.
No, and not easy.
And it's not easy. So you get to a story you're not particularly interested in, you can't skip it, and if you try to skip it, you lose your focus, and then if you lose your focus, you've lost everything. So I was looking for a solution. Now, being able to subscribe, and not subscribe, but connect your account, which is maybe a better way of putting it, connect your account to the Easy Reader app from Dolphin, this has enabled me to go in every day, choose the newspapers I want, which I can do right away. So that's what I did. When I signed up, I had gone into the app, I had chosen the newspapers I want to get every day. And now, every day, I just go into the app, they are all sitting there, I just double tap on it, and it pops up on the screen, and I can play, I can navigate by heading, by chapter, whatever I want to do, and it is great. The voices as well are good. I mean, Ava, I know, is a big fan, Sean's a big fan of Ava voice.
Yes, he is.
Can't think why. But She has got a lovely voice, and for that reason, she's lovely to listen to the papers with, and that's what I do. So she reads out the New York Times, and I get a different voice to read out the Daily Mail or whatever. But basically, it's a great app. It's free. You do have to sign up to use it, but the sign-up process is fairly swift. You just need your email address and your, you know, create a password, and that's really it. And after you've signed up, again, no cost involved, you're getting the Overdrive service, which is the RNIB Talking Books for free anyway. You just need your details so you can sign up to it. And there's also other ones on there. Now, Tim, you'll know more about these than I will, but there's like NLS, National Library Service, and Bookshare. Those are obviously the US equivalents. So I don't know if you've got this app yet in the States, but well, we're loving it here.
I don't know if Dolphin Easy Reader is available quite yet in the States. Honestly, I haven't looked it up, but if it is available, I'm definitely going to take a look. I'm curious to see if my US version of Overdrive with my public library information will make it accessible to me. I'm hoping it will, because this type of an app, and we always talk about how, you know, apps really make a difference, and we talk about using our smartphones and apps. These kind of apps really make a difference. And being able to access talking books or ebooks and have them be able to be navigated so easily and get the information and the content that you want, you know, right away without having to really dive in and search for it, or as you said, play the entire paper to get to what you want to get to. This is such a nice way to get the content that you want. We actually have a similar app service here in the States called NFB Newsline, and it does a very similar thing. You can pick from newspapers and magazines all around the world, locally and worldwide, and navigate in a very similar way. And so I'm happy to see that Dolphin has done this as well, working with Overdrive to offer this, because you're right. I think in the coming year, next year very easily could be the year of the talking book and the accessibility of books overall. As a lot of people know, the Marrakesh Treaty has been spreading throughout the world. A lot of countries have been coming on board here just this last couple of months, United States, Canada, in that as well. So with the Marrakesh Treaty and getting more access to books and digital books especially, yeah, I think next year is going to be a big year for books.
Yeah, and it's actually, just to clarify that, Dolphin and Overdrive have had no connection together. But what they have done, what Dolphin has done, is they've kind of created this app so that all these services can be aggregated together. So you can use Overdrive, you could use NLS. And interestingly, I did see NFB Newsline on there. So yeah, it must be available in the US then. So you must be able to get it.
Yeah, must be. It's
but
all
I think
connected.
I'd be really interested to see what you think about it, because a lot of people have tried the Overdrive app, found it quite complicated to get to where you need to be. Whereas with this, couple of swipes, find what you want, done. It was really easy to get the book, really easy to read the newspaper. I'm really impressed by it. And from what I hear, there is more news to come on all of this, so I'm very excited. I don't have all the details yet, and I can't talk about them because I'm sworn to secrecy. Sorry, guys, but that's the way it is. But it does mean that I'll get to know, so as soon as we can tell you, you know, at least I'm in the room and I can sort of tell you about it when it happens. So lots of exciting stuff happening. I think as well, one thing we want to get into is I think we want to talk more about Braille next year, because, you know, as I'm getting into it and I'm realizing there's more and more people out there using it, and with the advent of the Orbit this year, I think more people will be starting to use Braille. So I think that's going to be another big topic for us next year. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, Braille is not dead. It's not.
Yeah, as evidenced on this program, we've had so many emails about Braille, not just how can I use it or where can I get something like an Orbit to utilize it, but where can I learn it? And so we've had so many great emails and responses, you know, people offering training or looking and seeking training all around the world. Literally, we've had those emails come in. And so it really shows that Braille isn't as dead or dying as much as we thought it might have been. People still have an interest in it. And I think that's a really good thing. And like we said earlier, something like an Orbit reader will make that, you know, that space be much more important and more viable.
So the big question is, since we've talked a lot about evolution this year rather than evolution, we've seen that through all the products from Google, from Microsoft even, and Apple. I wonder if next year we see something totally different. I wonder if next year is the year of smart glasses. Now, again, this is one of these, maybe I'm a year too early, because there's a lot of talk about Apple smart glasses coming in 2020, and of course that'll match in with 2020, You get it?
Yeah, I got you.
It's like, okay. I don't know if they'll wait that long, but I think I'd love to see a revival in this because I think there are companies out there, and I know IRA, for example, is a big topic for you in America at the minute. It's not here yet, and I think IRA might be the next step for a lot of blind people here that uses smart glasses, but I would love to know how we go if we get smart glasses from a company like Apple, because I'm not thinking it renders a company like IRA useless. What I think it does is it complements them if they embrace
exactly.
it. But we shall see. I think in the final moments here, I think it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that given the timing and the way that IRA is rolling out their technology in the UK, as we know, they've just recently partnered with Heathrow Airport to make it free off of your subscription to be able to use the IRA glasses if you are in the pilot program, at least in the UK right now, because as we said, they've not gone totally public yet.
We don't mean that you're flying planes. We mean pilot as in the
pilot program, a testing program. Yes. You're not piloting the planes at Heathrow. You are just testing the program. Exactly.
How cool would that be?
Yeah, though, we don't need us blind people flying the planes. Well, they do fly themselves nowadays. But anyway, I'm really hoping that IRA gets a bigger push in 2019 in the UK. It's about time that it comes to you guys and you get to utilize it fully, not just in its testing phase. And I really think by the end of the year, this time next year, you and Sean will be saying that 2019 was year of IRA, when it, at least in the UK, you know, for UK purposes. And I agree, partnering that with something from Apple. And as much as it's cute and funny to say, okay, it's going to come out in 2020, I don't know that they can wait that long. I really don't, because no. I don't know that iPhones or iPads are going to make a big leap next year. We're talking about maybe seeing 5G be a big deal next year, potentially in smartphones. And that's really about it. There's not a lot of technology that they're rumoring to be coming out next year. So what else can they do to get the interest of the public? And I could see glasses being that thing. As some people might know, Apple about 3 or 4 months ago, I think it was now, they purchased a smart glass developer or creator out of Colorado in the United States. And so they have bought that technology and are working on it themselves. So I don't know that it's going to take them 2 full years to take that and turn it into something of their own. And if you can imagine smart glasses with a smart assistant, even if it is Siri, so what? You know, something like that built into it that can access things on your phone, your Apple Watch. I'm really excited to see something like that happen. And like you said, having that partner with potentially something like IRA would be amazing.
Well, that is it for our show for this year. Remember, we have got a special for you on Christmas Day. Hopefully Sean can join us for that. Otherwise, we'll see you in 2019 when we are back on Tech Talk. Tim Schwartz, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.